From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear this show at KCRW.com. I've always wondered if my guest, Jeff Garland, thinks of himself as an actor or a comedian. We know him as both, certainly as a great stand-up, but also from his work with Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's the writer, director, star of I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. I just love saying that title. Jeff,
thanks
for being here, first of all.
Larry David hates the title. You can't end in a preposition. That's what he says. So I searched for something else, but this title makes people laugh the second they hear it. If you laugh from a title, that's a good thing going in.
Did the title come to you first?
Oh, title was, yeah. Actually, the title came from I was having lunch with a woman named Susanna Melvoin. At the time, she was dating John Cusack. He was filming a Woody Allen movie in New York. And we were at lunch at the Museum of Natural History. We were talking about love and relationships. And she asked me what I want in a relationship. I said, well, what do you want in a relationship? She said, I want someone to eat cheese with. And I went, that's it. That is one of the greatest. I said, I'm going to use it as a title someday.
And you actually kept it in your head all the time.
Oh, most definitely, yeah.
Well, first of all, tell the audience a little bit what the movie's about.
What is it about? I don't even know what I play a guy named James Aaron who is struggling with his eating. He's struggling with love, and he's struggling with his career, which I think people can associate with all three of those. And it's really his story of a couple of weeks in his life.
Which is where we sat down. I was talking about Preston Sturges, because one of the things that sort of strikes me about the way you work in general is you tend to create communities, you know, certainly with Curb and with this, and coming out of the kind of background you did as an actor.
Right. And I studied filmmaking before I became a comedian. And then I went and became a comedian, and I'm sort of now coming back into filmmaking.
Well, where did you study filmmaking?
University of Miami.
And who were the big influences?
Well, Preston Sturges, obviously, Frank Capra, Ernst Lubitsch, Billy Wilder, Paul Mazursky, big influence, who's actually in my movie. Hal Ashby.
That thing that they all have in common is, again, kind of creating these cities, these
right.
communities.
These communities.
These things that they all,
yeah.
That's what they all did, these people
yes.
you named. Being a part of a community is kind of key to the way you work, isn't it?
Key. Huge, huge. As a matter of fact, God willing, the next movie I make, most of the actors from I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With will be in my next film, and so on and so on. I'd like to have my own company, per se. Which is what Preston Sturges used to do. And also, I have great respect for the smallest, teeniest parts. I want those to really kick, you know, which is what Preston Sturges also did. The littlest parts were done with such panache. It was great. And the overlapping dialogue, very important to me. I mean, I went through numerous sound people before I could find the right person who could do what I wanted to
because
do.
Because the speed of the conversation in this movie is kind of a blur almost.
Well, it can be at times. Other times it's very conversational is really the way to say it. And so generally it's not like I say my line, you say your line. I don't like doing it that way. I like doing it where you cut somebody off. Just say it. Just talk. Have a conversation. And you said I think of myself more as a comedian, by the way. That'll
Do you?
Be the answer. Yes. And when I look at comedian can mean filmmaker, comedian can mean actor, comedian can mean stand-up, comedian can mean writer. I'm a comedian. I'm not an actor.
Because more people probably know you nowadays as an actor than as a comedian.
Yes, it's just a blurring of lines of the thing. But I would say of all the things that I enjoy doing the least, that's being an actor.
Why is that?
Because generally, unless the Coen brothers are directing you or Martin Scorsese, it's a bore. You learn your lines.
Was Steven Soderbergh?
Steven Soderbergh was – what a joy that was. That was fun, Full Frontal, working with him. Oh, the movie didn't do whatever, but it was a cool movie to be in, and to work with him was great. So if you're working with a great director or if Paddy Chayefsky by some chance wrote the script, being an actor is a joy. But in general, when you're doing some commercial studio film, it's a bore. You're not even there to tell a story. You're just there to help – make their product. And by the way, I have children.
And promote the stars.
And promote the stars, most certainly. And I have children. I have a wife. I have to make a living. So I'm more than happy to do a movie that I don't really believe in and don't like, as long as it's for a very short period of time and a great deal of money. I'm more than happy to. But it is a bore. It is a bore.
That's why you're at public radio, of course, for the money.
To curb your enthusiasm as an actor, a joy. I'm improvising my own dialogue, and I'm improvising from scenes that are written by Larry David. It doesn't get any better than that.
But it's also very, very important in Curb, obviously, and I guess in just you're helping him conceive this,
right?
That it was a community there. You know, it wasn't just it was about a group of people interacting and, you know, being abrasive to each other.
Yes, that sense of friction. Conflict. Ah, my good friend, conflict. Yes. Conflict, and Larry David and myself or anyone else, we're all low status. We're all getting screwed right and left. And I find most film comedy today is not about low status. It's about high status that I see, and stand-up comedy too.
How do you mean?
Well, you know, it's like you see these movies where the lead comedian, per se, it's about bravado. It's about good looks, and I'm not saying good looks alone, but it's about like the cool guy from the football team is the lead in the movie, and all the thing revolves in him trying to get laid, or it revolves. It's like this new movie Superbad. What's great about that is we've got a big bowl of low status.
You could say
guys.
Probably the same thing about Knocked Up too, or even 40-Year-Old Virgin to some extent. Right?
Yes, yes, yes. Those are definitely Steve Carell played low status. See, there's certain comedic actors that, yes, low status. That's the way to go.
I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. My guest is Jeff Garlin. His new film, his directorial debut, is I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. But I think in the last year, we've actually seen kind of a swing away from that thing you were talking about, where it was sort of the chiseled guy who had no business doing comedy because he wasn't any good at it.
Well, I would say the swing is just Judd Apatow. I mean, his movies have the low status guys. But the one thing I will say is that Seth Rogen, who I really like a lot, he does get Katherine Heigl. And I don't know if Bud Abbott or Lou Costello would be with Katherine Heigl.
But that seemed to me to be the natural progression from Woody Allen, who always got Diane Keaton.
Mm-hmm. But Diane Keaton, mind you, who to me is the greatest film actress of my lifetime, and I adore her, she was not Susie Vaughn high status, and he didn't end up with her in Annie Hall, number one. And number two—
He ends up with her in Sleeper.
Yes, he does. But there's something goofy about her. There's nothing goofy about Katherine Heigl. She's just hot. Whereas Diane Keaton, the reason that she's above the whole universe is, who's funnier and goofier than Diane Keaton?
So you're thinking—
Paulette Goddard? I mean, you'd have to go back that far.
Are you talking about a tradition of actors? We can go back to Katherine Hepburn.
Right.
Or Jean Arthur.
Yeah,
or
Jean Arthur. Oh, you just hit the nail on the head. Jean Arthur. That's the greatest. It's like, yes, beautiful, but beautiful in a goofy way. Beautiful in a way that you can see her sitting at home on a Saturday night being sad. I don't know. The women in comedies today, which is now suddenly our new theme, seem to be women that like, oh, dear. Not that we all aren't lonely or have bad nights, but these girls are way too hot. Look at my movie. Sarah Silverman's in my movie. But is she goofy and funny? You bet. Do I address the fact that she's hot and I'm not in my movie? You bet I do. I don't see that very often in other movies.
Because I would say maybe the indie comedy movement of like maybe the early 90s, that kind of thing, actually had the kind of things you were talking about.
Right.
That were actually in a lot of ways close to what you do with I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With, which is to say behavioral comedy rather than situation comedy.
Most certainly. Most certainly. Behavioral comedy rather than situation comedy. Yeah, most definitely. Because that's when people say to me, what's your movie about? It's about the behavior of my character, really. It's funny, but it's also poignant. And when I'm interviewed about it, people are like, I get a response from the press who've seen the movie that is generally, they're very surprised by it. And I don't know necessarily that they're meaning that as a compliment. That's just maybe my own sort of way of thinking, is they see it and they go, I didn't expect that, because I know what they were expecting. They were expecting a much broader comedy. But if you're making a movie for under $1 million or $1 million, and it's why not go deeper into somebody's behavior? Why not show real behaviors, you know? Why not show real emotion and vulnerability, you know, of a character in a comedy? These people aren't vulnerable. But that's why, like I'm mentioning Superbad right and left now. I mentioned when I came in, these guys are vulnerable. So that's interesting to me.
It's The Treatment. My guest is Jeff Garlin. We're talking about a number of things, but his first film as director, writer, and star is I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. Because I was wondering, as I watched the movie again, how much the shape of the film changed as you guys were shooting?
Well, people think it's really maybe 50% improvised. And it's like 90% scripted, 10% improvised. But what I did with every actor was, please know your dialogue. Know it inside and out, and then play the scene the way
but
you want to.
It's also a bunch of people you know. So you knew.
Yeah, I wrote most of the parts were written for the people, for Bonnie Hunt, for Amy Sedaris, for Sarah Silverman. They were written specifically for these people and to their strengths.
Because there's a confidence that comes out of that kind of comedy, isn't there?
Right. Almost certainly. If you put people in their comfort zone, why do I want to put someone in a zone, at least especially for a comedy? Like people said to me, why didn't you cry more in the movie? Well, why did I have to cry more in the movie? What did you feel the need? To me, I'll tell you my favorite acting moment. My favorite two acting moments, both have come from Wes Anderson movies of the past, let's say, 10 years.
Okay.
One with Ben Stiller in Tenenbaums.
The Royal Tenenbaum.
When at the end of the movie, he's with his father and the fire truck's out there and there's been the crash. And he says to Gene Hackman, I've had a really tough year. And he's on the verge of tears. Greatness. The way he said it that moment. So touching, so affecting. If he was crying, the whole movie's ruined. And my favorite acting moment of all time is in Rushmore. And that's when Bill Murray finds out that Jason Schwartzman's character's father is not a surgeon, I believe he was pretending, but a barber. And Bill Murray's face during that scene is the greatest acting I've ever seen in my life.
Well, but you talk about people expecting to cry, but when Marty is a touchdown in the movie the way it is, that almost leads to a certain kind of expectation, doesn't
it? Well, yes, but no one's going in expecting my movie to be Marty, you know.
You know what I'm saying, because it's mentioned in the film.
Well, Marty does break down at one point, someone does, but Marty's an out-and-out drama.
It's funny because I read an interview with Padalecki once. He said that he always thought of Marty's being a comedy.
Uh-huh. Well,
and he was shocked that people—
I would say this. Padalecki's right. In other words, I'm not going to argue with the man who wrote it, the genius who wrote it. So I'm not going to sit here and go, well, I think. But I felt, for me, it's a drama. There's so much sadness, especially the Rod Steiger version. There's two versions. There's the movie, which won the Academy Award, and there's the TV version with Rod Steiger. And the Rod Steiger, even more, is such a hardcore drama. At least that's the way Steiger played it. So
Rod Steiger and Nancy Marchand.
Nancy Marchand, exactly. And so, I mean, I don't know. I sort of want to do more of a comedic Marty. And I also, you know, I can cry, but I don't need to put on a parade of my acting chops. I just want to make an enjoyable 80-minute movie. It's 80 minutes, which I'm very proud of, because everything is 900 years too long now. I don't want to waste people's time. My little movie is 80 minutes long. But I really, if I felt that there was a reason to cry, great. Curb Your Enthusiasm. I think we've had one crying scene, and that's when Richard Lewis's assistant finds out that Richard Lewis is dying. She didn't know, and she cries on Larry. It creates comedy. So often when actors come in, for whatever reason, mostly actresses, they choose to cry in the context of the scene. The minute they cry, comedy goes out the window. It's like the crying has to be so specific to what's going on. By the way, as we're talking, I want to establish the fact I know nothing. Because I'm pontificating Johnson right now, and I want to establish the fact that I do really know nothing. And Padalecki is right. Marty is a great comedy. I would never argue with the ghost of Padalecki.
And on that note, we'll come back with more with Jeff Garland to be wrong about. He's right about his new movie, though. It's funny and it's short. It's I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. You're listening to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. Sitting across from me is the star, director, and writer of I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With, Jeff Garland. When I first met you, I told you what I thought was a great performance. I mean, you're working full frontal, playing someone you had never met before.
Never met, yeah.
Harvey Weinstein. But you had somehow found a way to
portray that?
Right.
Where did that come from, that performance?
There's some – I can't, actually, you know what the truth is? I'm not allowed to say. I vowed – someone did an impression of him for me, okay? Someone who used to work with him did an impression of him for me. And from that impression, I sort of toned it down a little because it was obviously a broad thing that they were doing and I had to play a real character. I toned it down. I just played this guy. I had no idea.
Just seeing that reminded me of something I read that Martin Scorsese said years ago, is that for certain kinds of parts, especially for character parts, you want comedians because if they're taking it seriously at all, they can always bring something to it that you hadn't thought about.
I have been told by directors that I work with, it's one compliment that has come through over the years to me, is that I always bring in the unexpected to them. I never expected that. When I was on Mad About You, David Steinberg would direct a lot of the episodes. He said, I never expected the choice that you made the way you did it. And I think if a comedian's trusting in the way that they are, they'll always do that.
But again, too, comedians, you work by yourself. And that's why I think of you as an actor, because as a comedian, you've got to basically be there to defend yourself. You're there on stage by yourself.
Well, that's the form of stand-up. I mean, there's so many aspects of being a comedian. I mean, when I was on stage at Second City, I'm an improvisational comedian, which I would say that I am more than anything. As a director and as an actor, I'm improvisational. I always like improvising. Here's the way I was trained as an actor, or a comedian, if you will, through Second City. My job is to make the other actor look good. When I'm with Larry David, I'm there to make him look good. You cannot count on the other person doing that for you, which is too bad sometimes. But when the other person's trying to make you look good too, you win, they win, the audience wins, everybody wins on every level.
I would think that so many directors who brought you in basically think that I know that what he can do. I'm just going to cast him and leave him alone. Now, is that a good thing for you or a bad thing?
Good directing is leaving the – it's all about the casting.
Really?
Oh, if you've got a good script and you've got – and you know where to put the camera and you've cast it correctly, you should not be Note Johnson. You should be leaving actors alone unless there's a problem and you need to go in and fix whatever it is, or you think if you say one little thing, it might send them in a direction. But if you're overbearing on an actor – like I've had directors, while I'm rehearsing, just come down with a ton of notes. It's like – I know right then I'm working with a hack. I know that the director's not good because any great director leaves actors alone, doesn't say anything. Woody Allen, I know for sure, many people I know in his movies, he says something when he has to. He might say, just do it again, but do it faster. What a great note. Great note. He trusts his script. He trusts where he put the cameras. And he trusts that he cast it correctly, that he put in somebody who can do the job.
Well, see, that's what I wonder for you in directing this movie. Did you know right away where to put the camera? Did you already have that trust that you knew where to how to stage it?
I spend a ton of time on my – when you go out and you go through your locations, you know, and you say this is where we're shooting this. That, for me, is a very long process because when I'm at the location, that's when I'm thinking of where I'm going to put the camera. So when I arrive at the set, I already know and the DP already knows where we're putting the camera. That I already know. Now, will I make adjustments? Of course. Do I have a shot list? Of course I do. I'm very prepared. I don't have to go. Having a shot list is insurance. It's insurance that you've got it covered on a minimal level. Like, this is what I need. But there may be something that occurs to you, and you may, in the one-er, I usually shoot masters and try and shoot one-ers if I can, one-er being one take, the whole thing in one take. I prefer to shoot that way if I can. And if I know I've got it in the one-er and I think, ooh, what might I cut here when I'm in editing? All right, I might cut this section of the scene, and then I might go in from that point and get some singles here and there. But I try and get the least amount of cut. I mean, it's tough for an editor, but at least I'm already editing the movie in my head, so I won't I don't want to do 100 takes and a million coverage. Three takes, you know, two, three takes. When we got it, boom. I shoot, at least in terms of an independent film, I was shooting like 8-10 pages a day. And I was doing maybe 10-hour days because I knew what I wanted and I knew where I wanted the cameras.
It's the truth. My guest is Jeff Garlin. We're talking about a number of things, but his first film as director, writer, and star is I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. I wondered if you felt more comfortable with the technical part of shooting the film or with the part where you're working with actors.
Well, obviously, working with actors, but I trust my DP and I trust my producer. So I collaborate with them to make sure that technically I'm getting what I need and I'm doing it in the right way. there's no arrogance on my part. Anybody on my set can come up to me and talk to me about something. You know, even when you're doing television, if someone has a note from the studio, whatever, great, give me your note. I don't have to do it, but I want to hear it because sometimes even people who don't have good ideas have a good idea.
And that they can trigger a good idea from your response.
Most certainly, yeah. You know, I know my responsibility with Larry David, for example, is I say blue, so he comes up with red.
But as you were talking about the way you were directing the movie, a lot of – especially the early episodes of Curb were really like that.
Right.
I mean, it's apart from that a little bit. I mean, just
right.
Because the shows have become more complicated.
Right.
But especially the first season was very much that thing you're talking about.
Yes. I would say the first season of Curb and especially the hour special, the pilot letter, I had a lot more personal influence on those. As time wore on – I sort of – two things happened. One was it stopped becoming that because things become what they become. But also my job is to get Larry David's vision on the screen, not Jeff Garland's vision. So as I learned that, not from the hard way, not from fighting with him, you know, it wasn't a difficult thing. It's just something I figured out on my own where I don't need to go for this. What does Larry want? That's what I need to go for here as an actor or as a producer when I'm watching a take and I give a note to – Larry and say, we should do it this way, I think, because of this and, you know.
Shooting masters like that with actors that you know can deliver lends itself to the kind of comedy that you do, that you seem to be versed in.
Yes. I can honestly say where I got it all from. Probably Bergman, because I got it all from Woody Allen. I love shooting a scene. You put the camera there, people walk in and out. They're off camera. And there's times where nobody's on camera, but you hear both voices. I love that. I also love a level of sloppiness. As long as it feels real and it feels right, I'm not concerned with continuity. You know, I remember reading this interview with Almodovar about he shot a movie. Maybe it was his first movie. And then they had to reshoot a scene with an actress and her hair was completely different. And he said, what the heck? Let's just shoot it that way. And nobody ever said anything. I mean, if Buñuel in Your Object of Desire... Two different actresses. I think if you're caught up in it, you're caught up in it. If it feels real, it's real. So,
but at that point, you know, as Buñuel, people thought he'd make some kind of comment on surrealism. But if you have that.
If he was making comment, I just enjoyed the movie. Let him have his comment. But I love that movie. I mean, here I am making comedies, but my influences are like not only Woody Allen, but like The 400 Blows, for example, and Stolen Kisses. You know, the ending of my movie is very influenced by Stolen Kisses, I have to say. You know, so here I am making comedies. So when I get these studio comedies and I look at them, and look, I'm not Baron Von In Demand in terms of being a director. I want to present it that way, but I am considered, and I do want to direct.
I hope all these nicknames are like screen names or yours online or something.
I just make them up, yeah. But I'm living in a different world. I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, a world where I wish movies were more like Ashby's movies, you know, where they just there's a feeling of just rawness and realism that is missing. Everything's so slick and everything's so long. I want to kill myself. In comedy, I'm talking about. I love dirtiness.
It's The Treatment. We're talking about the less than fastidious Jeff Garland.
Yes.
His film as director and star and writer is I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. But as you're
talking about. I also want to say, I don't want to mistake that for laziness. It's not that I'm lazy and don't want to do a good job.
You're talking about rawness.
I'm just talking about feeling. It's a feeling that I'm going for.
Because all these people you're talking about, Truffaut and Buñuel and Woody Allen and Bergman were all pretty meticulous. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. It's not like I'm not meticulous in terms of my approach to it. I put all my work in before I get to the set. And once I'm on the set, let's have a creative, free feeling. And the only thing technically we have to worry about is what the gaffers are doing or where the camera's being placed. Everything else should feel very free and very loose.
Because what you're talking about that seems to be missing from a lot of comedy is perspective.
Yes.
And if you, I guess you're making a big studio movie where your big goal is to get as many people into the tent as possible.
Right.
And you don't want to offend anybody.
Right.
That almost is one of the first things to be sacrificed, isn't it?
Well, I think what you're sacrificing is an actual movie. You're making a product. It's product, man. I've been in so much product. It's ridiculous. Product, product, product. I mean, look at Daddy Day Camp, which just came out, which is a sequel to the movie I did with Eddie Murphy. And it was very joyful working with Eddie Murphy. I really enjoyed myself. But that was product, and this is even more product. They use the exact same pose of the poster from the thing.
They're basically saying people are interchangeable, and as long as there's a black guy and a big guy.
Proved wrong. It made no money, and it will make no money. You know, that's the lesson. And by the way, for the record, they tried getting me to do it. They didn't offer me enough money. If they had offered me enough money, I would have been happy to be in their piece of crap product. More than happy enough. Thrilled. You know, you do Daddy Day Camp for the money. Cuba Gooding, you know, people want to know, why is he in Daddy Day Camp? He got a big check.
Oh, nobody wants to know why he's in Daddy.
Nobody got a big check. I'm telling you. That's the reason why he got a big, big check. It wasn't like he laid in bed at night and was, how am I going to approach this character? You know, there was no thought process. It was like, wow, my kids are going to be taken care of more and my wife will like our house better.
Well, but at a certain point, you're doing this so you can finance something like I Want Someone to Eat Cheese
Most with. Certainly. And by the way, I know Cuba, and I know that's the way he looks at it. I know that – I mean, it's being pragmatic in terms of they make their product. I'm happy to be in your product for a short period of time if possible for as much money as I can. But I want to earn a living there because I – like, for example, my movie, I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. How much did I make on that movie? I took out a second mortgage to pay my bills. That's how much I made on I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. Director, writer, star, I made enough money to be able to take out a second mortgage to pay my bills. Not to finance the movie. I'm not going to do that and put my family at risk, per se. I mean, I went to individual people, which was – that was a horrific experience. Some very nice people invested, but that was one of the worst experiences of my life, you know, professionally, that is.
Because?
Because I met with people. I met with a guy. He was very excited. I want to invest in movies. I'm from Chicago. Movie takes place. Can't wait. I meet with him at the Mondrian Hotel. He brings two hookers. And the hookers had better questions than he did. Okay? And driving home that night, I'm crying. I'm talking about being vulnerable and being low status. I'm crying because my kids, I would have rather done homework with my kids. I would have rather spent time with my wife. And here I am meeting this guy with whores who pretends, big fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm, wanted to meet me, met me, gave me nothing. That repeated itself in different incarnations 50 times. Some people did give money, which they wouldn't be in the 50. It was just a horrific experience. I would never do it like that again. Now I write my movie and I team with a producer and they look for the money and either it's made or it's not made, which is what I just wrote a movie and that's what it'll be.
Well, you kind of feel a little bit though that by having done this, you're really itching to do another one now, aren't you?
Oh, understatement Johnson, look at you. I am so itching. I am so passionate about being a writer-director. I'm really passionate about it.
That's a great way to end it because we're out of time. Jeff, thanks so much for
doing this. Oh, wow. I could do 9 other segments, and I'm sorry if I pontificated and talked too much.
Thanks again so much. You know, it's a really fun movie.
Thanks, man.
My guest is Jeff Garland, the writer, director, star, and preparer of I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With. Our technical director is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.